Hey, you guys, what's going on?
Man, look at this. I'm way over here now. Okay.
He says, yeah, are you going to scoot into the other video again?
It's like every fucking show. It's like
every fucking show, you're scooting into the other video. I don't know what your problem is. Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know. You don't know.
I don't know. I just noticed that it happens. Look how blue we look.
You're
your
drifting.
Hair looks blue, blue lights.
I have a blue wig on in
blue
case
wig,
you didn't notice.
Said blue, blue, yeah. But even our fucking soft bounce is kind of blue today.
Moon. Yeah. It usually is because I have it on the cooler setting.
Yeah.
Because for some reason, I kind of like the cooler setting more than the warm setting. Even though they always say, oh, people's flesh looks better in warm setting, I disagree. I think it makes me look orange.
Because you're trying to get that damn cadaverous pallor.
Well, yeah, that might be it, too. Yeah. Like, I don't really like, I don't want to look like I'm fucking tan or anything. Fuck that.
Or like you're a living person.
Yeah, nobody, who the fuck wants that? Not me, that's for sure.
All right, so we're going to do the professional, also known as Leon the Professional.
Leon. The Professional. Or sometimes it's just called Leon, or sometimes it's just called The Professional, or sometimes it's called Leon colon The Professional, which is what Wikipedia lists it as.
I saw this when it came out, the theatrical cut, and I liked it. We watched the extended cut, which I heard somebody else call it like the French cut.
I think I've heard it called like the long version, the international cut. Because that's the version that was shown, like, in Europe and stuff like that. For the American market, please correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I read that for the American market, I think 20 minutes was cut out of it.
Yeah, well, I do remember, I don't really remember the original cut, okay?
I don't either. It's been a long time.
Yeah, it's been a long time. But I did remember thinking that it was a good movie, but, like, there was, that it was vague and left some to be desired.
Well, that would explain it.
This movie here seems more like a complete movie, and it was satisfying. A satisfying movie. So, I don't remember what was added, but it must have made a difference.
Well, I think, as far as I'm aware, I believe it was, but I think it was like between 20 or 25 minutes it was cut out of the American version. Almost all of that was the extended scenes of, like, the developing relationship between Leon and Matilda.
Okay, yeah.
So a lot of the more, quote-unquote, like, overtly, I guess, sexualized kind of stuff that was in there, like, all of that was taken out.
Okay.
And I think later on in the third act, I think they took out some stuff that made it clear that she was helping him on his jobs. Like, she was essentially, like, an accomplice.
Yeah, she was
actually there.
An assistant assassin.
Right, so I think they took most of that out.
Right.
So I think that was kind of like the 20. But like
figures.
I said, Xanada sent us the Blu-ray for this. So thank you very much for that, Xanada. And it had both the theatrical cut and the long version. I was like, well, obviously we got to watch the international, because I don't want to watch a movie with, like, a bunch of shit trimmed out of it.
Yeah.
Come on now.
I do remember thinking that when I first saw it, that it was like, had a, you know, basically it was kind of like a, almost like a pedo movie, all right?
Well, we'll get into that.
That was the impression that I remembered having. But this version, where there's more left in it, actually disambiguates that.
You just invented a word, Tom.
Yeah. It wasn't, but when you're leaving that bitch ambiguous, I'm thinking pedo shit. Okay? But when it was shown in its entirety, no. No, she was in love with him, but he wasn't doing anything with her.
Right.
It makes it clear that he's like, it's her. And it's because of her upbringing and what went down with her and her family getting wiped out and shit like that. He didn't think this was a good idea. And it makes it clear in the movie that he wasn't sleeping with a girl. He thought she was kind of crazy.
Well, he understood that was not appropriate.
Right.
I think, I mean, and it's kind of ironic because I feel like knowing, you know, roughly what scenes were removed, like for the U.S. version, like you said, I think taking the shit out made it seem even worse than it actually
worse,
was
right,
because
it
removed a lot of context.
Yeah.
Now, I will note, okay, so here's the thing, because this is going to have to be addressed at some point. So the director of this, Luc Besson, you know, who obviously did Fifth Element, La Femme Nikita, stuff like that. This was actually a little bit of a same, well, I don't know if it was the same universe, but it was like inspired by La Femme Nikita because Jean Reno played a character named Victor the Cleaner in that. And so this is like an expanded version of that character from that movie.
Although there's another movie that this is, I think, a direct ripoff of, but go ahead.
But Luc Besson, very famously, okay, do you remember the scene in this movie where it's kind of like it's Leon's one of the first assassinations that he shows where he kills all those guys and then he goes to that one main guy and he ends up not killing that guy. Like he has like the knife against his throat. Mm-hmm. And at one point, like there's that guy's girlfriend or a hooker or whatever. And mm-hmm. she's like, bye, I'm out of here. She leaves.
Yeah.
Okay. So that woman,
she was a hooker.
Mei Wen.
Yeah.
That at the time was Luc Besson's wife.
Okay.
Now Luc Besson met her when she was 12 years old, and okay. he was 29.
Okay.
And started dating her when she was 15.
Okay.
They got married, and she had a baby at 16.
Okay.
So this movie is a little bit autobiographical.
Oh, stop it.
I guess. No, like, yeah. she said that. Mei Wen said that.
Okay.
She said this was actually kind of based on our relationship from back then.
Yeah.
Because it was... But the thing about it was that I think... I don't know if this is true or not, but in the original screenplay... And, you know, this is just what I read, so I don't know. This somebody might have just made this up. But I heard that in the original screenplay that Leon and Matilda did have sex. Jean Reno, the actor that plays Leon, he was like, bro, I'm not doing that.
Right, okay.
So he actually made the decision to... He specifically said, I wanted to play Leon as kind of... slow or kind of, you know, emotionally, you know,
simple
or something like that. He's like, just so it would make it clear that I wasn't into her like that. You know what I mean? Because he wanted to. And really, if you watch the movie, because I know some people are grossed out by it, and that's totally valid. Like, I get it. It is creepy, but it's, I think it walks the line well, because I got the impression that he saw her, like, as a daughter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or like, a protege, like, someone to protect.
He was trying to take care of her. He didn't have any roots or anybody that he cared about, you know. And he came from a bad relationship, and she needed him.
Yeah.
Her family just got assassinated, and he could have left her out there in the hallway to get killed with the rest of them. But he took her in, and the other assassins didn't see it happen. They thought she lived there. So he saved her.
Yeah.
But then he wanted her to leave. But she couldn't leave. She was 12. Yeah. Where's she going to go? She didn't have any family or anything. So he couldn't just kick her out. So she became dependent on him. She looked up to him like a dad. But she didn't like her dad, so she couldn't distance that. She was fantasizing that it was her boyfriend.
Yeah.
And she had a big crush on him type of deal. But nothing happens in the movie. Yeah. And in a way, in the movie, she's a little bit more... She's a little smarter than he is, I think. She's kind of...
Yeah, he said that he wanted to play it like that, so she looked like she had more power in the relationship, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a Beauty and the Beast kind of tale.
Yeah, and you're not the first person to compare this to that. But yeah, so I do think that because... See, the thing about it is that, yeah, she absolutely does, and in the extended cut, if you haven't seen it, I'm pretty sure they took these scenes out of the theatrical version, but there is one scene where they're at dinner, and she's, like, drinking champagne, and she straight up propositions him for sex, like she wants him to take her virginity, and he's just like, he's like, nope. No, I'm not going there. But the thing about it is that you're not, I don't think, now, even though Luc Besson, you know, there's some questionable shit going on there, because he also had like a bunch of women like accuse him of sexual assault like later on, so great. But, you know, not great. But, so the thing about it is, regardless of like if the director is a creep or not, which, I mean, I guess he kind of is. If he's dating somebody that's 12 years old, like when he was 29, that's pretty creepy.
Yeah.
But regardless of that, like just as the movie comes across, she comes across as a damaged person. I mean, she obviously had this horrible family life. She couldn't stand her family. They all got wiped out, including her fucking 4-year-old brother, which was the only family member that she even gave a shit about. Yeah. So she just gone through this horrible, horrible trauma. She's completely orphaned. She doesn't have anywhere to go.
Yeah.
And she never really learned how to have any healthy relationships.
Yeah,
so the first adult that comes in and is nice to her and takes care of her, she's going to misplace her feelings on him. And she... Yeah. Absolutely did, like, say she was in love with him and she wanted to have sex with him and stuff like that, but he wasn't having it.
Yeah, and they, you know, they show that it wasn't just her, you know, her mom was real rough on her, but her sister was beating her up, and her dad was basically neglecting her. He didn't like her either. And then you find out that most of those people in that family weren't directly related to her. It was like half-sisters and stepmoms. The only one that was related, the only two that were related to her was her dad and her little brother.
Yeah.
And she's really avenging in the death of her little brother. She didn't really care. She says the other ones got what they deserved, basically.
Yeah, she said the other ones were assholes.
That they were bad.
Really give a shit.
And they were kind of a gangster family.
Yeah, the dad specifically was.
Yeah, they were. And but Leon keeps finding her out in the hallway, sneaking cigarettes, and she's all beat up, you know, because her family members are beating her up. And she tries to run from her family and make friends with him, basically.
Yeah.
But he's not really wanting to make friends with this girl. Because he's got killing to do, man. He's a fucking assassin.
He's
and
busy. He's got a plant to take care of.
Yeah, and he's real kind of emotionally cold. He doesn't have any friends, really. And no real life. He just takes these contracts, kills people, and then really doesn't get the money for it. The guy that is holding his money has spent his money. He doesn't have it.
Yeah, I'm kind of suspecting. Danny Aiello is like great in this as old Tony, who's like the mafioso or whatever that he works for. And that dude is kind of a piece of shit. I mean, he's essentially just taking advantage of Leon because Leon isn't the brightest bulb, but he's also like shit hot at what he does. Like he's a really good assassin. So he's basically like, yeah, we're going to give you this money, like $5,000 per head. And I was kind of, when they said $5,000 per assassination, I was like, wow, what a bargain. Yeah. You would have thought it would be more than that. Yeah. But anyway. So he's supposedly getting all that money, and old Tony's like, well, you know, you're not that good with money, so I'm going to keep it all for you. I'm like, bullshit, you're keeping it. You don't
keep it. Yeah, well, he was illiterate. He couldn't read.
Right.
And I guess he didn't know numbers.
So he's taking advantage. Right, yeah. He's basically... And that was the shitty thing, too, is, like, at the end, when Matilda goes to him for a job, and he basically says the same thing. He's like, oh, well, all that money that Leon said that I have, that I'm holding for him, I'll hold it for you, too. You know, here's $100. Like, get the fuck out of here. Like, go be a prostitute on this. Like, what's the little girl gonna do? You know what I mean? She's fucking 12.
Well, these are fucking pieces of shit. It's mafia.
Yeah, he's really a piece of shit. Even though he comes across, he's a great character. I really like that actor. He's in a ton of movies. But he just comes across as very like avuncular, and he's like, you know, oh, I'm so nice and all this other kind of stuff. But he's absolutely a piece of shit.
What impresses me about the movie is, first of all, there's a lot of cool guns in it, especially 90s guns. The acting's very good on all accounts. So every character, the acting's really good. The writing's good. The long version explains the relationship in more detail, and it's a lot more credible what's going on. It explains why Matilda's into this guy. Jenny basically explained it. You know, she's been through a lot of shit, man. This is the only person that's helped her.
Yeah, so she's going to, you know, she's going to displace her feelings of like, oh, this is like the white knight. This is like the person that saved me, like somebody that swooped in. And
she's trying to impress him by she can be an assassin too.
Right.
But it's all fantasy. It all comes crashing down on her in the end anyway. She did help out, but she didn't do much. She just fucking talked to people through the doors and stuff. She's more like a decoy. I don't remember her. She didn't kill anybody. Did she?
No, she didn't. I don't think she did.
She just... acted as a decoy, basically. Natalie fucking knocks it out of the park. This fucking girl could act.
Her first movie.
Man, she's fucking...
she's amazing in this.
Crying on demand, crying on command, and fucking pull off an Oscar-winning performance. I remember seeing it when it came out, and like me and all my friends, this is what, 1990-something?
1994.
1994. We were in the Army at the time, and all my Army buddies like, man, have you seen that fucking movie? Did you see that girl? We were all impressed with her, you know. We're like, how old is that girl? You know, we thought that she might have been a mid-teens or something.
Like playing younger, but no, she's not. She's playing 12. She is 12.
Yeah.
Same age.
Yeah, we were all like, man, she's cute, man. She's got to be 15, 16 doing the acting skills. No, she's 12.
Yeah.
She's great, though. Fucking,
I mean, you can see why she became a huge fucking star later on.
Because she wasn't famous, you know, to us when this came out. We didn't know that girl's name.
Like I said, this was the first movie that she was ever
in. We didn't even know that girl's name. Turned out it was Natalie motherfucking Portman. She'd fucking been in everything. Made millions of dollars. And she's great in everything. I've never seen her dial anything in. She's good in everything.
Yeah, she's a fantastic actor.
And can do a wide variety of stuff. Mm-hmm. I would think this fucking... playing Princess Amidala was actually one of her weaker roles, and that's she's well known.
And she's still good in
that. She's still good at it, though. But
she's honestly one of the best things in the
prequels. Yeah. Although the dude who plays Obi-Wan Kenobi's good at it too. So is fucking
Ewan McGregor.
Yeah. So is fucking
Ewan McGregor.
Mace Windu knocks it out of the park, and of course the Emperor.
Yeah.
You know. But what's the guy that did Mace Windu? Fucking shit.
He was like, what? Samuel L. Jackson was in that?
Sam Jackson. He's the shit. He's good in whatever he's in. He could phone it in and it's still good. Like, yeah. He phoned in Kong, if you ask me, and that's still fucking great. But Kong Skull Island?
Yeah.
He phoned that in, and that's it was still great. Though. Yes. Yeah. He was just, he played himself.
Yeah.
And it was good.
I don't know. I always feel like I'm impressed, because I'm not a big fan of kid actors, or like kids in movies. So,
oh, man, she was great in this.
But, well, that's what I was going to say, was that, so when you see a performance from a fucking kid, I mean, like I said, she's 12, that... mature that fucking I was just like man she was like fucking amazing
and
her parents really did not want her to do this movie by the way. I mean, you can kind of see why.
I don't think her career would have really gone anywhere without her doing this movie,
and she acknowledges that
this movie made
she's
made
like her. This is basically she said this movie handed me my career on a silver platter. Like I said, she finds it like problematic nowadays because of she's like, I didn't know about Luc Besson at the time, like about the shit with the 12-year-old girlfriend and all that kind of crap. She's like, because I was just a kid, I didn't know anything. She's like, so, you know, I have a more complicated relationship with it nowadays, but she's like, you know, absolutely that movie gave her her career. That was her breakout role.
Yeah. In order to keep fucking society sane, you gotta have fucking rules about fucking children, alright? But weird shit has happened. I've known people in my extended goth fucking universe, especially down in New Orleans, that have saved underage people from fucking bad life in the streets by letting them stay with them for a few years, and then they fucking ended up being of legal age. But, you know what I mean? Fucking, I don't think any sex was happening with that either. It was just, we're not gonna let this person be homeless, you know? They're runaways.
That's kind of different.
Yeah.
It's like, that's the thing, you never really, you don't want to like tip so far in the other direction that you think everybody is like a predator, because they're not. Like, some people are actually just helpful.
The girl I'm talking about, Jenny probably knows who it is. I don't know if I've told her the story. It was one of my buddy's girlfriends at the time. Years before I met them, she ran away from home, running from an abusive father. She didn't have a home to go back to. He was a few years older than her, but she was about 14. And he took her in.
Yeah.
Because what are you going to do? You can't send her back to her dad.
Right.
And and what are you going to do? Leave her on the streets of New Orleans? She's going to end up being a hooker.
Right.
So, and she's a goth girl. You're not going to just let her just walk around.
Yeah.
You know, so he took her in. You know, 3 years later, she was younger, or she was, legal. And no one was looking for her.
Right.
You know what I mean? And what are you going to do? Hand her over to the state? In New Orleans area, that'd be even worse. You might as well hand him over to a prison. So, I understand certain circumstances, you know what I mean? That's kind of the circumstances Leon was in.
Yeah, and
he was a criminal.
Like I said, he
couldn't
didn't
hand her over to anybody.
Right.
And
well, the
bad guys were looking for her.
The bad guy DEA guys were
looking for her. They wanted
her dead.
They
knew what she looked like too, because they saw the photos and they knew she was missing.
He had no choice but to take her in just for humanitarian purposes.
Yeah. Because the thing about it, I kind of feel like too, in the original iteration or the original script, I think that he was a lot more cold-blooded.
Yeah.
In the sense that even when he was training her, I think he just like let her shoot random people.
Yeah.
Whereas in the movie, you kind of think that he's going to do that, because remember like the one scene where he's showing her he'd use the scope and everything, and they go up on the roof, and you think, oh my God, because she's like, well, who should I shoot? And he's like, oh, whoever. You know what I mean? And you're like, oh my God, are they just going to like shoot a random person like to train her? But it's just like a paint gun.
Yeah, paintball.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think in the original script, I think that she did actually just like shoot random people. So she did actually kill people and think. But so they toned it down for the movie some, because probably somebody said, Luc Besson, for Christ's sake, what are you even doing? But, you know, because... Well, that's the thing. Even though Leon is a criminal, obviously, he's a hitman, but he's still, like, sympathetic. This movie is a lot more, like, the relationship between them, you could say that it has, like, creepy overtones, but it's actually kind of sweet. You know what I mean? I always, to me, like I said, he seems more like her dad. You know what I mean? He's, like, very protective of her, like a dad or, like, a big brother type of character. It comes across more like that to me because, like I said, he's very clearly not down with her.
In the end, he did say that he loved her.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a sexual thing. He loved her like she was a daughter. He was trying to protect her.
Yeah.
He basically died for her, basically, and then made sure that she supposedly got some money. I don't think she got the money.
I was kind of thinking probably no.
Yeah.
Because I don't think Tony didn't have any.
Tony didn't have the money.
Although she had, she had money, right? But she stole the money from her dad, like, out of the apartment, right?
Because
DEA guys didn't find it.
Yeah.
But didn't she use that?
She was trying to use some of it to hire hits.
To hire Leon to kill the people. Because that was her whole thing. She just wanted to kill them because they had killed her little brother.
She had some tuition money prepaid, so she went back to that school, and I think they let her stay there like as a charity case. And that was
They said they established at the beginning that her dad had paid the year's tuition in advance, and she had just like run away at some point, just a few weeks earlier or something like that. So I'm assuming that she could at least stay there for the rest of the school year.
Yeah.
So she actually did have, it's a boarding school, so she actually did have a place to go that was actually more age appropriate instead of like running around being a hitman. They were thinking about doing a sequel to this when she was like a couple of years older, and she was actually gonna become a cleaner because that was like her career aspiration. But they didn't end up doing it. Like, it just kind of went through too many iterations and blah, blah, blah. And then I think he ended up making another movie that I think was called Columbiana, which was kind of like the same kind of story, like about a female cleaner, but it was originally supposed to be about her, like when she was older. So can we talk a little bit about Gary fucking Oldman in this? Because
this is back when fucking old Gary was doing crazy roles and shit. He did a good job in this.
Gary Oldman in this is fucking off the charts insane, but it's so fucking great. He's so great. It really works.
Crushing pills in his teeth and fucking having spasms and shit. Never did explain what drug that was.
Yeah, they never did say.
You were just supposed to wonder. It was something bad.
Something that made him act like a total psycho.
Something to make your neck stretch out. Make his neck stretch out and look up the ceiling and go, kind of like that dude in Blue Velvet inhaling that laughing gas. Like
Frank Booth.
Yeah.
I'll fuck anything that moves.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so that's the thing. So the very famous, oh my God. I don't think we've ever reviewed Blue Velvet, have we?
Nah, that's a weird movie.
Did we? I mean, no, I love Blue Velvet. So. It's not my favorite David Lynch movie. That would be Mulholland Drive, but it's up there. It's a fucking awesome movie. But the thing, like Gary Oldman, you know the very, very famous, see, it's like a meme now. Where, you know, the guy's like, you know, hey, go get everyone. He's like, what do you mean everyone? He's like, everyone! You know what I mean? Like, he fucking goes hardcore with it. The story goes, and Gary Oldman, this is right from Gary Oldman's mouth. He says, I did that take as a joke. I was just trying to make the director laugh. He's like, because I had done that scene over, like, 50 times or something like that. And I just kind of said it different each time. He's like, mostly I just said it normal. Like, yeah, get everyone. You know what I mean? But then he's like, I thought I would be funny. So I go over to the sound guy, like, surreptitiously, and I said, hey, I'm going to yell really loud, so, like, take your headphones off, because I don't want to, like, blast your ears out. And then, so, like, when they did that next take, he's like, everyone! And then, like, Luc Besson was like, oh, my God, I love that. I'm putting that in the movie. And he's like, I didn't mean for that to be in the movie. He's just like, I just thought it was funny. But, yeah, so it ended up in the movie. And that probably ended up being the same. He said that he still, to this day, has people coming up to him doing that, because it's in... Like I said, it's like a fucking meme nowadays. Mm-hmm. Like the fact that he does that. But he's just like a great fucking villain. Also, can we talk about, I mean, if you haven't seen this movie, sorry, but we're going to do like spoiler alerts. Cause come on, it's 1994. Get with the program. I had forgotten, I saw this movie back in the 90s, but I don't think I'd seen it again since then. So I had forgotten what happened at the end. And wow, that the end is a bummer. It's a bummer. Because you kind of do, even though Leon is a hitman, obviously that's not good, you do kind of want to see him, like, and he kills a lot of people, and it's like a large body count. So you do kind of want to see him get away, though, and, like, meet up with, because that whole scene where he's, like, blasting the wall out, and he's, like, you know, helping her escape, and I'll meet you at Tony's in an hour, and you're just sitting there going, I just know this is not going to, he's not going to meet her in an hour. And he probably knows that, too. I mean, you know what I mean? So it's just, like, really, really sad. And then, like, it seems like he almost gets away, but then, because he's good, you know, he, like, dresses up like the SWAT guys or whatever, and, the, like, he's pretends he's injured, and he, like, sneaks out, but fucking Gary Oldman, he sees him. But Gary Oldman shoots him in the fucking back like a bitch.
Yeah. He didn't want to die.
Yeah. That's true.
He didn't want to die.
He's like, yeah, this is probably the safest way to approach the situation. Because this motherfucker has killed, like, every other person. Like, it killed, like, his whole entire, like...
It's basically Batman. Motherfucker would be up in the ceiling and fucking he'd get you with wires and pull you up and fucking drop down on the ceiling. He had custom fucking... Custom LCE, which is like a load-carrying equipment to carry grenades and weapons and magazines, suppressed pistols. And he's equipped. I don't know what kind of grenades those were. They were cylindrical. I never seen anything like it. Some kind
yeah,
of foreign,
I never saw ones like
some
that
kind
before.
Of foreign grenade, something European. A lot of the gun, they had real cool guns in this. A lot of the stuff confused me though. I wasn't really sure because, like, I guess it's supposed to be New York, right?
It is New York, yeah.
Okay.
And actually, a lot of it was filmed like that. Exteriors were filmed.
When
in
the New York SWAT team showed up, they showed up with a bunch of European stuff, Swiss rifles, SIG, those little SIG rifles. I forgot what it was called. 225 or what, I don't remember what that thing was called. It was like a piston 5.56 assault rifle, kind of like a real sophisticated AK that SIG used to make. They had those. They had FALs, or actually it looked like a 5.56 FAL type rifle, maybe like a Brazilian Imbel or something. They had some kind of a German belt-fed machine gun. It looked like a 7.62. It wasn't an MG42. It was something more modern than that. They had that. So they're carrying European weapons, MP5s and shit. And New York SWAT teams didn't have that then in the 90s. They were carrying German stuff. So I was that's whatever armory they hired had. They had good
yeah,
guns.
Yeah, I mean, it's a French film.
French, yeah, okay. Maybe
but,
it's because
I mean, that's why. It's a French film.
Right, it probably wasn't filmed in New York. Then.
No, they did. The exteriors were filmed in New York, and I believe that the interior of the apartment building where Leon lived, I think that was the Chelsea Hotel, the very famous,
for some reason,
you know, where Nancy Spungen got killed.
For some reason, they sourced a bunch of European stuff for the cops.
But I think a lot of the interiors were shot in Paris, though. Because, right. Like I said, this is a French film. It's a French director, French crew, everything like that.
New York SWAT teams would have all been carrying fucking M16s, American stuff. Maybe and MP5s. They would have had that.
But, you know.
SF used those. But some of the other shit was like, wow, why the hell they got that? But they do have cool guns in there. A lot of 90s era mini Uzis, the folding stock Uzis. A lot of cool pistols, CZ-75 type stuff. It was all kind of things that you would actually see back then, you know. So whoever did most of the guns, it was good choices on stuff. I just would have given the New York Police Department M16s and American stuff. That's what they would really have.
Yeah, but like I said, maybe it was just kind of
that's
like,
not what they had on hand, I guess.
And I mean, this wasn't like a hugely budgeted. I think it only cost like 15, 16 million to make, which was fairly small budget. I mean, it made like, you know, all of its money back and then some, because it was pretty successful actually in Europe and elsewhere. Even though, like I said, in the U.S. it was cut down substantially, but even then, like, it got good critical reviews. But yeah, so I don't know. I kind of feel like somebody was saying down here, Jones Perkins said, shoot him in the back is reminiscent of John Dillinger and Bonnie and Clyde. The authorities were so terrified of them that they would kill them in cold blood. Yeah, and I kind of feel like that, man, I'm going to say, like, the French, that when they make movies, they don't fuck around. You know what I mean? Especially, I mean, this movie, the gangsters, or they were actually DEA agents. They were all, like, crooked.
Yeah.
They were fucking brutal, man. They just, like, came in that house, and they just, like, fucking, they blew that woman away in the bathtub. They shot that teenage girl in the back.
Yeah,
they shot that 4-year-old kid that was, like, hiding under the bed. It's like, they did not give a single fuck.
Yeah. About Bonnie and Clyde, though, they weren't given a choice. That was Frank Hamer. And he was like the new pattern for law enforcement, which is just get shit done. Those dudes were a fucking menace. And Clive Barrow and fucking Bonnie were good. They were really good. They actually trained with their weapons. And they had a bunch of custom weapons, like cut down BARs. Bonnie could fire on the move and hit another man who was also running at about 150 meters. They were good, real good. They weren't like slack. So they weren't like slackers when it came to fucking firearms. And they could drive. They had already killed so many law enforcement agents, you couldn't take any chances with them. So they just set up a very standard ambush. When the car came down the road and it got in the middle, they would yell out open fire and everybody would just unload at the fucking their car. And that's how they got them.
Yeah.
A lot of it was BARs and Remington 35s. But it was, I think it was most, and I don't even think they, might have been some Thompsons, but I don't know. Maybe not. I think it was mostly BARs, 30-06, because it'd go through those cars. Thompson submachine gun wasn't very effective in that era against vehicles because 45 ACP isn't a very good penetrator when it comes to thick sheet metal that those cars were made of in those days. A lot of people didn't like them. They were good indoors, though, and good against soft targets. But if you're in a vehicle, Thompson isn't really what you wanted, and I don't think they would have carried that. There was people that were complaining about it. There was an alternate to the Thompson submachine gun, an alternate caliber called 38 Super, which is kind of like an American version of 9mm. It was a heavier bullet but and going a little bit slower, but it was also good. It was a lot better at armor piercing. The British bought a bunch of those because it was better. And it had a better range, better than 45. So, I don't know. But they didn't make that many of those. That was the deal about 38 Super. But anyway, I'm going down a fucking gun rabbit hole.
Trembling Color said, Movie Firearms Database is a cool site to go over movie like this.
Yeah, I check
Tom
it.
Always looks like
I
that.
Check it. I go, what the fuck was that? I'll pause it. Okay. Because sometimes...
He looks up like the cars in films, too. Yeah, like if there's like a cool car.
Like what car was that? sometimes you just get a glimpse of some... firearm and the angle and the lighting is kind of crazy. You're not quite sure what that was. Was that a CZ-75 or was that a Browning High Power? There's some shit that looks very similar on screen, you know. Or I'll see some guys firing off 1911s and I'm like, that's not right. That looks too skinny. And then you go back and check out, no, it's a Star Model B in 9mm. It's not a 1911. And do you see a lot of that in gangster movies? They're carrying 1911 45s, but then when the shootout breaks out, you look and the dimensions are a little bit off. It's because they switched them to 9mm. They'll switch it to like Star Model Bs, which looks like a 45, but it's 9. And they want that for movies because 9mm blanks are a lot more reliable than 45 blanks because the pressure isn't there. 9mm gives a higher pressure so it cycles more reliably. They don't jam as much. And they make a bigger pop or a little bit bigger fireball so it looks better on screen. That's one of the reasons why people, like we talked about this before on other shows, MAC-10s had a bad reliability, had a reputation for bad reliability, but not in real life. They had a bad reputation for reliability in the movies because... most of the MAC-10s they first were dealing with were 45, and 45 blanks don't work very well in a MAC-10 45. So because they jammed a lot, the people making the movies thought MAC-10s jammed a lot. They didn't. They only jammed with 45 blanks. If you switched it to 9mm, they worked well because there's more pressure. It was like the one Snake Plissken is using in Escape from New York is a 9mm. That's why it's running so good. I've had them before. I fucking love the MAC-10s. They've got internals for the new Macs that make them things so fucking sweet because there's a lot of Mac chassis out there that are transferable. It means that you can buy and transfer them in the United States easily. And there's all these upgrade kits for those things now. You can make those things sweet as shit. Tungsten fucking bolt carrier groups that slow the firing rate down, fucking better triggers, different uppers. There's all kinds of stuff.
Jones Perkins says, this is one of my favorite movies. She asks him, is life always this hard? And he tells her, yes, life is always this hard. I actually really did love that scene. That was like one right before they met. Like they were out in the hall. And she says something like, is life always this hard or is it just because I'm a kid? And he just basically says, always like this.
Yeah.
He says, But Sean Reno is like so. I think this might be. I haven't seen a ton of stuff that he's in, but I have seen like a handful of movies that he's in, and I think this is probably his most iconic role. This is for sure what made him like famous in the U.S. because he doesn't talk all that much, but you really get a good sense of his character regardless, just like from his facial expressions and like the way he's very stoic and he's. You know, a cold-blooded killer and stuff like that, but you get a sense of the person that's going on behind there just from his body language and stuff like that. So it's a really, really good performance, I think. Yeah, Frankie Capo also says my favorite movie. It's for sure, like, one of the best crime movies and one of the best movies of the 90s. And I liked it a lot when I saw it the first time in the 90s. I don't remember if I saw this in the theater or if I just saw it, I might have rented it, like, when it came out, like, a year or two later. So, I'm pretty sure I didn't see this in the theater. But I remember liking it quite a bit then, but that was probably the theatrical cut, because I don't think you could get the international cut over here until, you know, recently, until it came out on DVD or Blu-ray or whatever. So I probably would have seen the theatrical cut, so maybe I didn't like it as much. But seeing it now, like, with all of the stuff back in, like I said, it really gives a lot more context. Yeah, I can see why some of the scenes got taken out, but like we were saying earlier, I think them taking them out like almost made it seem worse because it made their relationship seem more ambiguous and you could kind of read shit into it. Yeah. Whereas like if you see all the scenes in there intact, yeah, some of them are uncomfortable and stuff like that, but they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
Like I said, she's not a healthy person. Like she doesn't have like the psychology, like the healthy psychology of a normal 12-year-old girl. She's messed up. I mean, she's traumatized. She's been abused her entire life, and she doesn't really know how to process her emotions.
Yeah.
So she's, you know, like I said, the first person that comes in is like nice to her. She's imprinting on that person necessarily, yeah. And like, you know, thinking she's in love with them, and she's, you know, just on the cusp of womanhood, I guess, and she doesn't really know how to deal with that either. So she's, you know, trying to sexualize herself really, and so he's just kind of like, yeah, no, we're not like fucking going there.
Read,
you know,
Trembling
what I'm
Colors. He's fucking.
Trembling Colors said, I was looking up that ultra rare Finnish submachine gun Stallone used in Cobra,
yeah.
On there called the what's that called? The Jatamatic.
Jathematic, I think is what,
yeah,
it's called.
Yeah, SMG.
Yeah.
Apparently it was a terrible, terrible gun. You know what's funny? We were just watching Oliver Harper just put up a video,
yeah,
about Cobra just a couple days ago.
You probably
ago.
Saw it too.
Yeah.
Probably reminded him of it. I hadn't thought of that gun in a long time, but I remember when it came out new, they were doing reviews on it. They did shooting reviews in the rags. Back then we had magazines that talked about the shit. I don't remember which one it was, but I had subscriptions. It was probably something like SWAT or Automatic Weapons was another one that I fucking had a subscription to. And they reviewed it and said it was great. So it probably depended on who it was you were talking to. Maybe it wasn't any good with blanks, because that was blowback operated. It wasn't gas operated. It was just a spring holding a heavy bolt forward, and that spring delayed the amount of time before the bolt opened up, allowing the cycle to continue. There wasn't any lock to it, but it was at a weird angle. The back of the weapon was kind of kicked up, so the bolt kind of didn't come straight back. It kind of went up at an angle like that and then came down, which was slowed the cyclic rate down, because open bolt, blowback operated submachine guns, when they're that small, fucking have a real high firing rate back then. There were ways to mechanically slow it down, but they didn't get into that. They were trying to keep the cost down. Probably wasn't a design that worked real well with blanks, but I read reviews back then of it. They were firing live ammo with it, and they loved it. It had a weird feature. You could pull the bolt to the rear, and it would lock to the rear. You could do it manually. It had a lever. I think it was on the top. But another way was that the foregrip could pull back, and it could push the bolt to the rear, so you could carry it around in a safe condition and then just pull back on the forward grip and put it into firing condition. Because it's dangerous if you're a soldier walking around with a damn bolt to the rear over a live magazine. You could drop it and the bolt could slip, skip over the fucking sear and fire off around. That was one of the big troubles with blowback. And if you're in the field carrying it fucking ready to fire, your bolt's open, man. Fucking dirt and shit could fall down inside that open breech. It's firing from an open breech. It's not a real good way of doing it. It's a cheap way of doing it, but in the field, there's risks that thing could fall in there and fucking gum up. It works. But I heard it was good. I heard it was real good. But it was a gun of its era. They don't make things like that anymore. It's fucking sheet metal. They make all that shit out of polymer now.
Murder Hornet says, what I want to know is what pills was Gary Oldman was getting so high
from.
Yeah,
I was wondering the same thing.
Yeah, we were wondering about that too. Yeah. It's like, because they were these big, huge. You don't need that
shit.
I
stretch my neck out.
I was watching another podcast of like a review where they had like a big long discussion about this movie. And the woman was saying, she's like, yeah, what the fuck were those pills? It's like, she's like, I always felt like they were the pills that he took to like to keep himself from turning into a werewolf. Like the way he was acting. And I'm like, yeah, they were kind of like that. I kind of like that they don't tell you what they are, though.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they're in those big, huge fucking, like, they're green capsules, right? And he just has... I mean, he's in the DEA, so I'm assuming he can get the good shit. But, I mean, it made him, like, a psych... Well, he wasn't, like, necessarily... He was psychotic, but he was, like, kind of, like, all over the place, like, up and down. Because sometimes he was very... But I think that's what made him scary, because he was real, like, erratic. Yeah. Like, sometimes he would be, like, that long speech he gave about Beethoven and all that kind of stuff. Like, he seemed very calm and all of that. But then, like, he would just, like, wig out suddenly.
Yeah.
That scene where he sniffs that guy, too.
Yeah.
I heard
he's
that...
He's trying to smell the fear.
I heard...
He's trying to smell a lie.
That the actor playing the guy that got sniffed, who was, you know, Natalie Portman's character's dad. Or wait, was it?
No.
Yeah. No. Because he was the one that was hiding the drugs, right? And he's I'm totally not cutting your drugs.
That's right.
So he's... apparently the actor playing him did not know that Gary Oldman was going to get close and start sniffing him.
That's good, yeah.
So he's like, so the reaction that you see on his face is an absolute genuine reaction. Like, what the fuck is this motherfucker doing right now?
That's good.
Yeah.
Good actors will do that, and then good actor reacts to it. And he knows what's going on.
Okay. Right.
Oh, this is great.
Gary Oldman is smelling me right now.
This dude knows this role, man. Because now you got something to play off of. Yeah, man. Yeah. He says something about the Jathematic.
Trembling Colors said, that review made me rewatch the movie. We just watched it.
We saw it a couple days ago.
Yeah, like 2 days ago.
It was a good review, man.
Because he was like, Oliver Harper put a new one up, because I love Oliver Harper. But yeah, he put one up of Cobra.
I want to review Cobra now. No, what did he say?
He said, maybe rewatch that movie, then look up the gun. Watch the Forgotten Weapons review.
Okay, you know who that is.
And, that's a good channel, actually.
Yeah, she likes his voice. What's his name again?
Yeah, he has a real relaxing voice, guy. I don't know what it is.
He's an arms curator.
Yeah.
He knows all this.
And he comes on and talks about it. He just sounds so friendly. I don't know.
Yeah, he is.
He just sounds like a very friendly dude.
Yeah, just real friendly. He's a gun nerd.
Yeah, and he knows everything about everything. Sometimes, like, Tom, like, will listen to it sometimes and I'll, like, hear it in the background.
Yeah. You said it had a progressive... the complaint was it had a progressive trigger.
Was a progressive trigger,
I forgot about that feature. If I remember correctly, if you pulled the trigger back just slightly, like a little bit, you'd get a single shot, like semi-auto, and then you could reset that over again, I think. And then if you continued pulling it, it'd engage a full auto sear. It'd go full auto on you. That would be... If that's what you're talking about, that'd be a bad solution. You don't need that. That'd fucking just get in the way of shit. It's something like a subgun like that, open bolt subgun's got to be rock and roll, straight full auto. You know what it is, and just let it run like that. You don't need that semi-auto effeminacy. Let that shit go full. It's meant for a fucking close-range fucking gunfight inside a room. You don't need semi-auto.
Trembling Colors also said, I don't need this Mickey Mouse bullshit is a great phrase from him to use. Yeah. That, overall, is just a great fucking scene where... You know, he's the DEA guy, right? And the two other guys, who I'm assuming are superiors or something, and they're taking him in the apartment where the massacre of Natalie Portman's family took place, and they're basically asking him to kind of, like, explain himself, and all he does, he just very arrogantly is like, well, the dude was standing over there, and he pulled a gun out, so I fucking shot him. And you know what I mean? And it's like, so the guys are like, yeah, but how about, like, all the, like, the women in the bathtub and all this stuff? I don't need this Mickey Mouse bullshit. He just, like, walks out, and they're just like... Okay. They just, like, allowed it. So it's just, like, I'm assuming that because he had all of those other guys, like, on his team. And what was the deal with the white Rasta dude?
There were lots of guys like that back in the 90s.
That was like, it was just like a random dude that was just like going through their record collection.
That was kind of like, back in the 90s, they had
like, I kind of remember
Billy
that.
Idol in the 90s had dreads.
Yeah, I remember that.
All right.
I remember that was a thing.
They had a whole thing where white dudes are going to be in a drum circle. They're going to fucking take psychedelic drugs, beat on drums, have dreadlocks, and try to fuck hippie girls. I don't know why you want to fuck them. They don't shave. But, you know, hairy armpits and shit. But that's what they were into. They don't bathe either. So, no thanks. No fucking thanks. Dirty ass flip-flop wearing chicks, man. Sandals and shit. No.
Oh, and
but they had dudes that were into that, you know?
That reminded me.
Stinky ass.
You talking about hippies and stuff like that kind of reminded me of, I had forgotten also that the song playing during the credits is Sting in this movie. So it's funny because we were watching the movie and then that Sting comes on, which, what the fuck is the name of that song? The Shape of My Heart or whatever the fuck it's called. And I remember that song, like, from back in the 90s. But, so that song comes on, and, like, we both, like, cracked up. And we're like, oh, my God. You never know, like, when you're going to expect Sting and his lingam coming at you.
Coming at you. Trying to get up in your yanni. Yeah.
It was just so funny because we were just fucking talking about Sting, like, on Friday. Like, talking about his tantric, like, you know, his girlfriend, like, riding his dick for 4 hours or whatever,
to talk his way up
and then Zach saying it's like his wife is over there reading a magazine because she's like super bored.
When I was a kid, fucking Sting's purpose was to talk his way up into your girlfriend's pussy. That's what he was here for.
Yeah,
I'm here to talk my way up into your girlfriend's pussy.
Well, at least he's being honest about it. Then Trembly Color said the white Rasta guy reminded me of Gary Oldman from True Romance as the Rasta Pimp. That's right. That's another one we had. Like, somebody brought that up before earlier because they were talking about Gary Oldman being a great villain in that.
Yeah.
And yeah, man, that was a great movie too. And I haven't seen that in a really long time. Yeah, we really need to, like, revisit that one.
That was old fucking Christian Slater's best movie, if you ask me.
I mean, he was in some good shit. He was in Heathers. He was in Pump Up the Volume. I really like Pump Up the Volume.
Yeah, they were okay, but that didn't compare to True Romance.
True Romance is great.
Yeah.
Trembling Color said, if it takes longer than 20 minutes, then you're both doing it wrong. Yeah, I'm not really sure what they're doing for 4 hours. It's just, I'm just sitting there going, don't you guys have anything else you need to be doing? It's just, I don't know. But that's like, that's really, really funny. So I had forgotten that there was a Sting song at the end of this. All right, so you seem like you've quieted down. Yeah. So I guess we're not talking about guns anymore. So you're just
no.
Like,
it's all right. Okay, we're talking about the movie. We finished the movie though, didn't we?
I guess so. Yeah. Okay. I mean, yeah. If
it's
you
a
haven't
great
seen,
flick.
Like
it's
I said, flick. I know that some people still are like weirded out by the whole, you know, adult man, 12-year-old girl kind of thing. I get
that.
It's
not that weird when you
but
see the full
I think
movie.
In context, it didn't strike me as that weird. Yeah, it's weird that she's kind of, you know, flirting with him and stuff like that, but that's just because she's messed up. Like I said, he doesn't take her up on it. Although, like I said, I heard that in the original script he did. He's just like, oh yeah, totally, and they had sex. So that's creepy for sure.
Yeah.
And I'm glad they didn't put that in the movie. But I'm just saying, the movie as it stands and the way that, you know, that Jean Reno played it, you know, he's very clearly very uncomfortable with the way she's acting because he sees her like as a daughter.
Yeah.
More than. You know.
It's just the way, you know, it was just a movie and things like that really happen. I mean, shit. Well, I remember when I was in high school, fucking middle school girls would fucking just throw themselves at you like you were a fucking rock star. But when you're 10th, 11th grade, you can't be caught dead with a fucking girl from 8th grade. You crazy? Doesn't matter. Yeah. You know what I mean? But they're about that age and little fucking girls flirt, you know what I mean, and fucking have boyfriend fantasies. You know?
Yeah, and I mean
they do that.
They're little kids too.
Little kids,
they don't really know
the
implications.
By the time you get to 9th grade and shit, all that shit's calmed down. They're hiding all that.
Yeah.
Yeah. They know how to fucking keep that shit under wraps. They do. You know how? You remember what they were like?
Yeah. Well, I was one.
You
was. So
you
I,
were
yeah,
one. Yeah.
So I know what that's
it's
like.
Not out really that out of character as portrayed in the movie.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it was pretty accurate because I knew some kids that age, like girls that age, that absolutely did act like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, they would act like very overtly sexual. They didn't really know what they were doing, or they didn't really know what the larger consequences of it were.
They don't know the full impact of
right.
it. And they're emulating adult behavior.
Yeah.
And looking forward to when, I'm gonna have a boyfriend. You know what I mean? They want to have a boyfriend now, but they're too young.
Yeah.
They wouldn't know what to do with one.
Because, I mean, the thing about it is that I think a scene in this that a lot of people were squicked out by was when she was playing that Guess Who game, and she comes out, like, kind of dressed like Madonna, like she's doing, like, and she's singing like a virgin.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But like I said, she was just pretending, and then she does Marilyn Monroe, and she's singing all breathy, like, Happy Birthday, Mr. President. But
he's trying to be attractive as possible.
Right. But like I said, like she doesn't really... Yeah.
Hey, see, I was going to say, you said that this movie was kind of inspired by... what was it? You mentioned the movie.
What?
It was kind of... That this movie was kind of...
La Femme Nikita.
La Femme Nikita.
Well, a character in La Femme Nikita.
Yeah, I would say it actually reminds me more of another movie that I saw. It was just like this, except it was gender swapped. It was called Gloria. And it's about an old gangster girl. She's probably in her 50s. And she's kind of like a retired girlfriend of some fucking gangster.
Like a gangster mall or whatever they call it.
Yeah, I don't know what it was. It's like that's your gangster girlfriend. You know what I mean? And then when she gets too old to be your girlfriend, you just kind of put her out to pasture.
Replace her with a
younger one.
Sure.
Yeah, but she was a badass too. Her name was Gloria. And she was a retired gangster. And the family next to her was low-end gangsters. And the dad from there fucking runs over with their little boy and says, here, you hold him real quick. Hold him for me. She's like, I don't want him. She's like, just for a minute. And she goes, okay. And she brings the kid in, and the dad goes back to the thing, and the mob shows up and kills that whole family because it was the same thing, stole money.
Yeah.
And now she's stuck with this little boy.
God damn it.
And he's probably about 6 or 7 maybe. And it's a similar situation. She's protecting this little boy. The mob's coming to kill him. He thinks he's the man in the situation. He's trying to... She goes, I'm the man. You listen to me. He goes, oh, you're the man. You know, it's just funny shit. You know what I mean? And she never had any kids. And she's kind of taking him on as like a... Kind of like a surrogate kid. You know?
Right.
But he thinks that she's his girlfriend.
Right.
And it's called Gloria. I remember it being a real good movie. I haven't seen it in a long, long time.
I wonder what year that came out. I mean, I kind of vaguely remember. I don't think I saw it, but I think I
Early
remember
80s.
Hearing about it.
Yeah. And she kills a bunch of dudes defending this kid. She's trying to get out of New York, I believe, if I remember correctly. And I think her boyfriend did eventually show up in the thing and helped her escape with the boy. It's called Gloria. Haven't heard of it in a long time. We gotta see that one again. It was kind of like this.
Yeah.
And she wasn't an assassin. She was just a gangster girlfriend.
Right.
But she had guns. And she used them to get the fuck out of there. She was just kind of a tough, smart New York broad. Broad. I'm gonna call her a broad.
I like broads.
Yeah. Because she was like from that generation.
Right.
You know, this is happening.
I like a good broad.
Yeah,
in a movie.
This is happening like late 70s, early 80s, and she's already like in her 50s, so she'd been around for a long time, maybe 60s.
Did she like chain smoke and have like
yeah,
one of those
chain
voices?
Smoking and yeah,
what are you doing?
Exactly, exactly.
See, I love that.
The fucking all the lipstick on and the fucking white hair and the
that's
fucking,
what I'm gonna be like when I'm 90.
And the fucking
get the fuck off my lawn.
Yeah, and the fucking revolver and the fucking
I can't wait
and the leopard skin fucking. Jackets and shit, you know. It's just
fuck
just
yeah,
yeah,
fuck
yeah, that's Gloria.
I'm gonna do that.
Yeah,
shit.
We'll find it. We'll find it.
I'm gonna do that.
Oh, so you think you're the man? Oh, you're the man. Okay, yeah, you're the man. Yeah,
I
you're
kick
the man.
Your fucking
yeah,
ass.
Yeah, exactly. She's one of those.
That's fucking awesome. Mm-hmm. Camp Guy said, "Is La Femme Nikita the one with the American remake with Bridget Fonda?"
Yeah,
no.
It was good.
La Femme Nikita was the original French one.
Yeah.
And then they did an American remake, which, Trembling Color said it was called Point of No Return.
Point of No Return, okay.
That's right. Which I saw, I don't remember much about it.
I
remember really liking La Femme Nikita.
I liked both. I think I've seen them both.
Yeah, I've seen them both.
No, I liked them both, I think, if I remember correctly.
I'm thinking of, like, other Luc Besson movies that I've seen. I mean, obviously, The Fifth Element. I think, I don't know. I might like this one slightly more than The Fifth Element, but I'm not really sure, because they're kind of, like, different movies. I will note, though, that one early Luc Besson movie that I had been looking forward to rewatching, because I remembered seeing it back in the 80s, and I was going to review it for my channel, was Subway, and it was on Shudder, HBO Max, something like that. And I started watching it, and I was like, I couldn't even finish it. I was like, man, this thing is like fucking a snoozer, man. And I had forgotten, like, because I remembered it being really cool. Like, it has Isabella Gianni in it, and like the dude that was in Highlander and all that kind of shit. So I was just kind of like, man, I remember really liking this movie because it was all kind of like new wave and everything, because it was like early 80s. But I was watching it again. I'm like, man, this is really boring. So I didn't even, like, finish it. I was going to review it for my channel, but I didn't. Maybe I was just in a bad mood that day. I'll give it another go around. But, yeah, Trembling Colors just said Subway is a good. But, I couldn't get into it. But like I said, maybe it was just because that was the mood that I was in that day. I'll have to give it another fucking go. Because I remember liking it back in the 80s when I first saw it, but I don't know. Yeah, Trembling Colors said Gloria is a great movie.
Okay.
And there's a shitty 90s remake with Sharon Stone. Okay, was it called Gloria also? The one with Sharon Stone? Because I don't remember a movie with her like that was called that.
Yeah. So, you know, people might fucking pick on this movie. But to me, it was a copy of Gloria, which I haven't seen in a long time. I want to see it again. I remember liking it. I saw it a million times on HBO when I was a kid.
See, I don't... Well, which is weird because I...
It.
I probably would.
Yeah.
Because I kind of, I saw like millions and millions of movies like on HBO and Cinemax and stuff like that when I was a kid, because they would, you know, they had like tons and tons of movies and I didn't, you know, we home during the summer. And so I saw a bunch of them, but I never saw that one.
It was good.
Yeah.
It had realistic combat, like shit that gangsters would really do. Like they just try to run her over one time, if I remember correctly. They're doing stuff in public. Everything, like I remember when they came at her a couple times, it was... They tried to make it look like an accident, like it was something deniable. Yeah, right. I mean, it wasn't just gunning her down. But it's been a long time. I might have that confused with something else. He seems to remember the movie. We've seen it more recently. I just remember that it was real gritty, and it was. I remember it being very realistic and cool. It had good acting, and it had a dark New York indie feel to it. And the way it was kind of depressing looking. Everything was real run down. It was
like New York was
like
back
New York
then.
Was back then, and fucking
doesn't much look like that anymore.
Yeah, and all these basically kind of like 2-bit gangsters in fucking old suits and hats and shit, just showing up, saying a few things, and then leaving. You know, type of deal.
I'd kind of be curious to see it and see if it really is as similar to The Professional.
It's about the same press, about the same
premise, just
gender swapped,
right? Oh, I didn't know this. Trembling Colors said, Gloria, the original was directed by John Cassavetes.
Yeah.
Who was a great director of realistic type movies. Yeah. He was also in, he was an actor as well. Like, wasn't he in Rosemary's Baby? I think he played Guy in Rosemary's Baby.
See, you're selling her the movie. She's going to want to see it now. It was a good movie.
Yeah, I like John Cassavetes. I've liked his other movies. But yeah, I haven't seen them all, but like, yeah, I like his movies. So yeah. So we definitely have to see that now.
Yeah.
So shit, man, like we have to see Gloria, we have to see True Romance. We're never gonna like live long enough to review all these fucking movies.
It's like there's an element of just kind of natural sexism. Because this is an older guy and a young girl, they're automatically people jumping into this pedo shit. In the other one, it was an old lady and a little kid. People jump to the pedo thing.
Well,
but that little boy was fucking protecting like he was the man, you know, all that kind of shit, you know what I mean? You listen to me and you're my girlfriend now, that type of shit. You know, just weird shit.
Well, in some ways, I see that though, because like the dynamic isn't quite the same.
Yeah.
And plus the kid in this is a lot younger, so it's not kind of like he's on like the cusp of puberty.
Yeah, no.
It's not quite as weird. Because when he's just like a little kid, then you're just kind of like, oh, it's just cute.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and I'm not saying that it's, like, it doesn't happen. I'm not saying that, like, older women don't, like, abuse, like, little boys that age, because they absolutely do. I'm just saying that when you see it in a movie, I don't think people are immediately going to jump to that, because they just think, oh, cute, he thinks he's the boss, you know what I mean, because he's just so little. So I think that's probably why. I think the problem people had with this one, like I said, was because, one, Natalie Portman was clearly, like, on the cusp of puberty. She's, like, 12 years old. And also maybe because the director also sort of, like, married a teenager.
Yeah.
So.
I can understand.
That's a little problematic.
That's not what happened in the movie, though. So So you can kind of...
Yeah, it doesn't happen. Yeah, it doesn't happen in the movie.
In the movie.
Like I said, maybe that's where the idea came from. Right. But like I said, the actors were like, no, let's not.
In the movie, it's just people helping each other.
Yeah.
Really, that's all it is. And that there was a love between them. But it wasn't a sexual love.
Yeah, not on his part.
Not on
anyway.
His part.
And I think even by the end,
I think she had kind of realized too
that
it wasn't possible.
That he was more like a dad figure than like.
She was wishing that was her boyfriend.
Yeah, which, like I said, is very common for girls that age. I know it's like uncomfortable for people to think about, but girls that age do fantasize in that way. So
yeah, they want to be women.
It wasn't unusual.
It doesn't make it. You know, it's understandable. They want to be women.
Yeah.
Boys that age want to grow up and be men.
Yeah. Know? Yeah, you're just thing. Right.
Yeah.
So it's not, you know, when you think about it in that context, it's not that creepy. And Xanada is here. So, yeah, Xanada is the one that sent us this movie. So, yeah, thank you very much. I really, really enjoyed revisiting this one because I had never seen the extended international cut. And I don't think you had either, had you?
No.
Because I just saw the American cut, like, earlier. So it was nice to see, like, all the context, like, put back in.
Yeah.
And then he says, I sent you guys some Guy Ritchie films. Yeah, he said that he sent us Snatch and Lock, Sock, and Two Smoking Barrels.
Yeah,
so I'm like, because I've seen both of those, and I think I've recommended them to you, like, several times. I think you would really like them. Especially, like, if you get into, like, British crime, because remember I made you watch Sexy Beast?
Yeah.
Because like, I don't remember if it was Xanadu or Louis that sent us that. But, yeah, I really like that. I think that I saw that in the theater, and you really like that. But I was like, there's a whole subgenre of British crime movies that you would probably really dig.
Yeah.
You should also see Layer Cake, because Daniel Craig is in that.
Yeah, Xanadu, you've been sending me a lot of good movies lately. I'm going to send you some retro used M16A2 furniture when I get a chance. I know what you got. We're going to get that dissipator looking good.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
It's a whole good exchange.
Yeah. I have doesn't have any heat shields, though. I'm going to get you something else. Yeah, the heat shields are missing. But I got some hand guards, Colt hand guards, but there's no heat shields to them. I know a place to get some that has heat shields, though.
Okay.
Yeah.
Somebody said earlier that they liked the gun talk, so.
Oh, yeah?
Okay. So you're safe.
Yeah.
I don't mind.
Well, they got guys in here that are into that shit.
Yeah.
It's a part of movies, too, American culture. It's all in the fucking movies, and a lot of us buy guns.
Well, I mean,
based on
the
what
thing
movie
is,
it was in or whatever, you know.
The thing is, like, I can't be too thing about it because it's like, you know, I dork out about particular details in movies as well. So it's like, you know, it's just not the same things that you would dork out about, but you know. Xanadu said, I don't even like a lot of movies, but the ones I send are hopefully good.
Yeah.
I'm very selective about movies I like. Yeah, I mean, you know. Trembling Color said, what do you think about the early found footage movie, The Last Broadcast? I watched it lately and liked it all up until the end, which I think they shit the bed with the twist. I kind of agree with you on that. I actually did a review of it. I can't remember if I put it on this channel or my other channel. I think I put it on this channel. So it'd be under my Flickers of Fear thing. And I think it was like a few months ago that I did it. Yeah, if you don't know, it was like, it was a found footage movie that came out like 10 months before the Blair Witch Project and just got like completely subsumed by the Blair Witch Project hype. But it's actually pretty decent. I really like the premise. And the premise of it is even kind of similar to Blair Witch, but they didn't rip each other off because they were working on it at the same time. But, yeah, I mean, I didn't mind the ending, but I don't know. I thought it was inadequately set up. I don't really like want to spoil it for anybody that hasn't seen it because it does have like a really big twist. But I don't know. I didn't love it, but I wasn't that mad at it. If that's
wasn't that mad at
I was, you know what I mean? Yeah. Yeah. All right. So are you ready to wrap things up? Okay. So we're gonna wrap things up. So tomorrow's Monday, and that means it's a Haunting Mondays. And on this show, on tomorrow night's show, we're going to be doing the next episode in season 5, which I think is called The Uninvited, I think is what. And I was like looking at the pictures from it and stuff. I kind of vaguely remember it. I think it's another one that takes place in like a restaurant or a bar, like instead of a house. So I know we've seen it a couple of times, but I don't remember all of the details. So that's the one we're going to do. So if you want to watch The Uninvited, it's from season 5, episode 8, I think it is. So if you want to watch it before we do it tomorrow night, then that's what we're going to do. So thank you very much for dropping by and hanging out with us this evening. Again, thank you, Xanada, for sending us this movie, because we really did enjoy it. And we'll see you guys again tomorrow night. Good night.